Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Danielle Farage. Danielle is a workplace futurist and community builder. Hi, everyone. Another very exciting recording time for me. I'm with Danielle Farage. We connected on LinkedIn through one of her posts around Gen Z needs. And that's why I've actually reached out and said, let's talk about that. But first things first, hi, Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Hope you're too. Thanks for coming on. Let's start with a bit of background. What is your job? Why do you do what you do?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I did put out this LinkedIn post, and it came from a little bit of frustration with just all of the conferences that I was attending. You know, the fall was full of conferences, as we all know, virtual and some in person. And I found myself being, you know, attending these conferences and seeing a lot of older folks on stage and not much younger representation. And I was like, where are all the young people? If we're reimagining work, then shouldn't we involve all generations and all, you know, priorities focused people and in the workplace? And so it was kind of, that was my olive branch to say, hey, I'm here. So anyway, I am a workplace futurist. I aim to elevate a consciousness around the intersection of identity, culture, and workplace. So what I do is I build community and I create content to really help support people in order to find fulfillment at work and beyond. And really my mission is to create more awareness, empathetic leadership, and also advocate for the side of talent, right? For Gen Zers and people who are maybe younger or don't know that they have options as much and have them, you know, demand more for themselves and from their employers. So I'm kind of trying to serve both sides of the coin as a speaker and also an advocate and also an educator. So yeah, that is what I do. And then in the scheme of it all, I also work at CAFE. I'm the head of growth and marketing. Mainly I run the community that we're fostering. And I also am the co-admin of the Future of Work community on Upstream, which is a next generation platform for networking.
Yeah, there's lots we will have to tap into. Let me disentangle that a bit and start with the community you're managing, which I find very interesting. I've had conversations with a couple of companies are actually looking into employing community managers for their offices as well. So what are the tasks and responsibilities you have as a community manager? And how does a typical day look like?
Yeah, so the idea of community is really, and I've asked several leaders in community this question of, what does community mean to you? And I think everyone will have a different answer, and that will dictate the way that they choose to move forward with community and really execute on it. In my mind, I came across this idea of community when I was managing the former community in a former job of mine. And essentially, we were trying to elevate consciousness around the intersection of human process and automation and saying, you know, how can we move human resources forward to be more automated, but also to be more human? Because a lot of the tasks that HR people end up doing are very mundane and tedious. So when I came into this new role and I was trying to really create my own community and trying to figure out, okay, what is it that I want to try to solve? I landed on, you know, workplace is a really hard job, it seemed like. It seemed like workplace people were always straddling between the interests, much like HR, I might add, the interests of senior leaders and their vision, right? Their most of the time very traditional vision. And then also the interests of talent who are saying, we want flexibility, you know, majority of people. So I think, and then also balancing their own opinions and very strong beliefs that are rooted in morals and ethics and values, that they have to juggle all these different things. So when I think of community, I think of a place where people who share a common belief or idea or vision for the world can come together to share perspectives and bond and support each other. So I wanted to create that same thing for workplace leaders. And yeah, so my idea of a day in the life of a community manager is really, how do you link business goals and align business goals with the goals and interests of a community? And I think that's a really hard line to draw if you don't measure the right things. But essentially, like, my day looks like, you know, I wake up, I maybe send a community newsletter or email. I'm always planning an event for that week. So we have weekly chats called Workplace and Chill. And it's essentially like kind of like a kickback session focused on sharing stories with a focus on connection, intention, and mental health. So that's that. And then what else do I do? I measure and track, you know, people who are coming into the community, how helped do they feel, and how responsive are they to certain events? Do they show up? Retention? And then really, what is the ROI, right? What is the difference between a potential sales lead who encounters the community and one who doesn't? And is there an impact on how they convert? So always measuring the impact of, you know, what value is the community bringing to not just people and workplace leaders, right? But also our customers and potential customers.
Yeah, I find that a really interesting aspect of it that you mentioned, like tying it back to business outcomes in the end, because it might feel like a, I don't want to say annoyance, but like another task to do with the workplace. Now we have to create a community, and do people even like that? But companies will see that they most likely benefit from that on many levels, actually, because if you have a strong community, the outside world will notice that, and you will be known for that, like many, many of the big tech companies, for example, are, that they have this strong ties within.
Right. And if you think about the inception of companies, right, and how they start, it's always, there's a central idea or vision that the CEO, it's their job to really carry and to push forward and to advance and to then also inspire people to come work for them, right? And so when you think about a company and how it grows, and, you know, from beta users to customers, it's all these people are buying into the vision of the company, and it's the same thing as community. So as I see it, and it's interesting that you've spoken to several people who are building community internally, I think that the future of corporate looks a lot less hierarchical in nature and more of a community-based approach where people have the ability to opt in and opt out, right, without much scrutiny. And people have the ability to give their opinions a little bit more freely, right, where there's more psychological safety and there's a more equal level shared across the organization. It's less hierarchical in nature, right, and more focused on what is the skill or thing that you're contributing to the overall goal and mission. It's more focused around how are we solving the problem that we're here to solve.
And what you're interested in personally as well, right? I know from Google, at least, that they have like a certain percentage of workload that they need to work on the projects assigned, and the rest of their time they can spend on the projects that they find interesting and find them themselves, like from the company pool, which I find is kind of a cool concept to do. But we're venturing into many things. Let's steer the conversation a bit back. I wanted to ask you, so what is CAFE?
At CAFE, we really believe that a great employee experience should empower people and provide them with flexibility. And hybrid, it actually implies real life interactions combined with work from anywhere or remote work. I think the biggest problem that companies are facing right now when it comes to hybrid is that they just don't know how to approach it. And we're entering this new world with little to no research. And a lot of companies have done remote, right? And
hybrid is just kind of another story. And as we spend less time in the office, you know, people are losing connection at home, and it sometimes can become a sort of puzzle to meet with each other. And at the same time, you have new employees who are coming into the organization who are on their own, or, you know, maybe they're coming into the office, but most people have started remotely and they can't really engage with the company's culture in the same way. A lot of the time you actually learn about culture by going into the office, right? And that's been the central hub for culture. But in a hybrid world, it's sort of different. And then you also have this problem, which at the same time, you know, you're trying to meet people and discover people and create new relationships, but there's little to no visibility as to where people are, where they're working from, whether they'll go into an office that is a ghosted workplace or where people are fighting for seats. And, you know, this is really hurting retention. So we saw this problem arise actually from the end user themselves, which were Tom and Arthur, who are the co-founders of Cafe. And it's really this opportunity to create new ways to collaborate and socialize. So you can essentially log on to Cafe, you can see who's working from where, you can compare your plans with your teammates' plans or people that share the same interests as you, maybe speak the same languages. You can also find out, you know, what's happening around you and decide to meet in a place like the office or a co-working space or a cafe. This works out especially for people who travel, right, between offices. You can actually see, well, who's working remotely, maybe from the hotel that I'm staying at. So it's also fully integrated with, you know, things like chat features and calendars and a bunch of HR tools. So essentially it's kind of like touch and go. And, you know, we basically empower people at the end of the day to create deeper connections professionally and personally grow. And at the same time, give people the freedom of choice in a really difficult situation, which is figuring out hybrid. So it's kind of this perfect mess is what I like to call it. But really, we try to create some clarity and transparency between people in a very intentional way that like is designed for personal connection.
How do you see then the purpose of the office going forward?
So in my opinion, offices have now taken a different kind of role in companies now that we know that we can work remotely and that people are productive remotely. I think that the offices have kind of transformed to be a complement to the culture of a company versus being the epicenter of it. And what that means is I think that the office is meant to be a place where creativity and collaboration happen and versus a place where, you know, you go in for a Zoom meeting or a place where you go in to focus, right? And of course, people can use the office in different ways, but most of the time people want to go in because other people are going in and their favorite people are going in. So, you know, the definitions of creativity and collaboration can look different for different people. And for example, a young professional on a sales team might have less experience at the office, and creativity might look like a brainstorming session for them because they've maybe never participated in one in person. And for a sales leader who has always been, you know, a sales leader, creativity could look like doing an internal internship on the diversity and inclusion team, right? For example. So I think creativity and collaboration look different for different people and ages and stages of life and of your professional career. So I think the purpose of the office is to really bring people together, to bring that social serendipity that we have all been missing out on. And the collaboration piece for a younger person could also look like mentorship. And for an older professional who has more experience, it could look like a reverse mentorship. It could also be drinks after work. So I think the idea is, you know, the office becomes a dynamic space
where people come together around common interests, and it serves as more of this supplement to the central community or the vision behind the company.
Kind of creating a platform for people to bring themselves and their skills and experiences in exchange with things that they're seeking to get, like viewpoints and just inspiration. Like you said, we get inspired by people that are different than we are and do things different than we do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, companies building out hybrid programs, and we've touched a bit upon what you do with CAFE. What are some of the things that you think companies can do really wrong with it?
One thing that companies can do wrong is by not talking to people and not involving people of all generations in the workplace, in the conversation around what do you want? So I think that when you sort of generalize or have this understanding of, oh, this is how it's always been, so that's how we're going to continue to do, I think that's the wrong approach. And I think it's one that is really difficult to break, because when there's a certain way of doing things, people are resistant to change. And that's totally normal. So I think one of the things that's kind of come from that is the monitoring of people. We saw a huge surge in the adoption of monitoring tools in 2020. And then the other thing is, I think office mandates, mandating people to come back. You know, I spoke recently with a senior at USC. She is graduating and she's looking for a full-time job. She got an offer from a company, very big one that we would all know. And the problem is they have a 3-2 structure. And 3 days in the office, 2 at home. And she has a illness. She has a chronic illness. And she said to me, you know, I'm scared to ask for another day where I could work from home. And I think she's definitely not the first one to feel this pain. But essentially, when there's a mandate like that, right, where you say, oh, you have to come into the office, I totally understand the point of it, right? It's to save money and costs. But I think it often overgeneralizes and kind of looks beyond the real needs of people, the human need of being okay to, and for there to be an understanding that, oh, well, if you can't come to work one day, then like, that's okay. And for there to be a norm of that happening, right? For leaders to be able to tell their teams, oh, like if you're not feeling good, like you can stay home. And for that to be like an etiquette, right? So I think that the idea that, you know, you can also manage the return to office with a simple spreadsheet is another common misconception, which I mentioned earlier. And I think there's a lot of, you know, I look at the remote conversation and the hybrid conversation, the flexible first conversation, as one that is honestly a women's issue. It's an accessibility issue. It's a diversity issue, because you have working mothers who largely have dropped out of the workforce. And you also have people who have accessibility problems, like a chronic illness, who can't maybe come to work one day, but they won't know how they feel tomorrow. And then you also have, you know, diversity issues, where I spoke with one woman who, she's a Black woman, and she talked about experiencing microaggressions on the way to work and how that impacts her in her daily life. So I honestly think of this hybrid situation as, if you're mandating people, like, that's fine. You know, that's your decision. And I think at the end of the day, people will find the culture that fits them. But at the same time, not revisiting these conversations and these policies, a big thing that I think companies are doing wrong, to not revisit and to not, you know, speak with the team, because people's preferences change, their priorities change. As you have kids, you might need more flexibility. And by not providing that, and by not opening the conversation at least to that, I think they're going to lose out on talent and people are going to leave.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising how the media jumps on like the great resignation trend, and companies as well seem surprised by people leaving, when you're yourself creating a barrier for people to be themselves, to go after the things that they need to look after with the mandates that are in place. And that's actually one of the areas that companies are worried about. It's recruiting and retention. But how do you change the company culture to still remain an employer of choice? What's your view on that?
Yeah. So I was listening to a podcast and it was kind of talking about my generation. And basically, I think the first step to becoming an employer of choice or staying an employer of choice is always tuning into the preferences and the values of new talent coming in. And this company called 10Spot did a lot of research on Gen Z, especially over the past 2 years. And they did several studies and found that Gen Z had the strongest opinions, even though that we were the most few at the time, we had the strongest opinions when it came to the way that things should go and the way that things should work in an office setting. And although only one class, literally the 25-year-olds right now, were working for a year before the pandemic happened, we still were able to have that, you know, to develop these ideas and beliefs that I think we're now passing down to the rest of us. And I see myself as more of a millennial, so like a little bit older Gen Z and like on the cusp of millennial. So I see it as my sort of job to inform people who are younger than me and also the generations above me that, you know, things have to change in order for you to survive and to retain and attract talent. So I think that this idea that corporate culture can't change and like people, things have to stay the same, let's throw that out the window just right now. And essentially what I think companies can do is figure out, and I think a lot of companies did do this during the pandemic, and I commend them for that, you know, figure out what is it, what are the values that we really believe in, and really tuning into what are those values, how are we exemplifying and living those values? And if those two things don't match, then getting down to work and getting your hands dirty and interviewing people to understand the culture that currently exists. And then based on that and understanding where people are trying to go in their careers and their professional lives and how they want to see things change, using that information to then say, hey, this is the culture that we're trying to create. And then trying to attract people to that vision. Right. So I think that's like one thing is really having those conversations and also always educating yourself on what other companies are doing, paying attention to that. And, you know, for example, I talk about being a cultural investigator in your everyday life. And I say it, you know, not just for talent, right, to understand, oh, like what kind of culture does Amex have versus Amazon at versus all these different companies versus a startup, and always be talking to your friends about it. But I also will say that to leaders, because I think the most innovative leaders are tapped into what companies are doing today and what they're doing tomorrow, and then really planning for, okay, what is it that we're trying to build next year?
Yeah, that makes sense. It boils down to listening to people and being curious to find out what makes people tick and not stick to what has made you tick. Because I think that's actually a common mistake, to think what you perceive as motivating and purposeful is what everybody perceives the same way. Well, we've touched briefly on diversity, and I'd be really interested as well to hear from you, like, how can we make sure that we incorporate diversity and equality in our teams? Because I think that's where the base level where we need to start. And then in the organization, what can we do?
So I think that companies often approach the diversity thing with a less of a focus on, I think, what attracts diversity, which is inclusion. And inclusion is really a central theme and value behind community, which is interesting to me. So I think by focusing more on how do you build community, how do you create space for people to bring their most authentic selves to work, that will then foster this environment where people feel more accepted and valued and seen to
bring themselves to work, and then that diversity will come. So I think a lot of organizations kind of stop at, well, let's hire diverse talent. And it should be more about, well, how do we engage this talent? How do we add to their lives? And I think it goes back to the same conversation that, you know, and theme of this conversation, which is getting more personal about and intentional about how you provide an employee experience to someone and what that experience looks like. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing a lot of companies, I think innovative companies, hiring things like a head of remote or a head of employee experience, because they realize that if we're going to create and really invest in remote workers, then we need to include them and we need to make them feel heard and valued whenever possible. So one example that I love is when you have like these company all hands meetings or even team meetings where you have a distributed team, maybe some people are in the office or maybe it's a hybrid meeting, for example. You start with having the remote workers share, you know, how things are going or having them kick off the meeting, because it then shifts the focus onto, well, we really value them. And we want them to feel included, even though they're not in the office, we see them. So I think I like that example of really showing like, oh, like we really value diversity of location, right? As much as we value diversity of thought. And yeah, I think, you know, overall, we've seen a lot of companies invest in DEI leaders. But I think having this more holistic approach to how do you create and act on the value of diversity and what does that really mean to an organization, digging into that and having really everyone be involved in that conversation is really crucial to creating real diversity. And yeah.
It's about not just doing it for the numbers, for the ratios, right? For really being interested in that other point of view and having or treating ideas equally and not dismissing them because they're not what you're used to, kind of. So it's, yeah. It's a complex topic on many levels, actually. Now, we have the chance to make things different if we're open to it, we as individuals and companies as a whole as well. What do you think are the things that need to change first?
It's a big question. So I think one of the things that needs to change is a shift in thinking from work-life balance to work-life integration. And I think that shift has to happen on both the employer and the employee side, but I'll speak on the employer. Essentially, we've always thought about work and life being different and separate, when in reality, in the pandemic especially, we're working and eating and sleeping in the same place. I work in my bedroom. I also sleep in my bedroom. I also, you know, party and dance in my bedroom. So this is like where a lot of my life happens. And I think that for a long time, people couldn't bring their full selves to work because it just, you know, as soon as you enter the workplace, you were supposed to fit in with a culture. And I think that we need to start thinking about how, instead of, you know, really focusing on, oh, how can this person add, or how can this person perform for us? How can they fit in with us? How do we recruit people like us? I think there needs to be a shift of, well, how can this person add to our culture? How can this person make us think differently and stimulate interesting conversation and challenge the ways that we've traditionally done things? So I think having more of a holistic approach to inclusion and to hiring is one thing that I think companies could do better. And this understanding that we're not recruiting for people like us, we're recruiting for people different, who think differently than us, who we can still work with and to still serve a purpose, right? And on that same note, I think, you know, I was hosting a session with William Tincup, who is the chief editor of recruitingdaily.com. And we really moderating this conversation with him. And he said that one of the biggest differences between innovative leaders or differentiators of innovative leaders is that innovative leaders are solving their hiring problems in a different way. Let's say they're hiring for a software engineer and they have to get a project done, right? It's for a specific project and it brings up this need of, oh, we have to hire a software engineer. Well, now a lot of leaders are thinking, well, how can we fill that need? If not a full-time software engineer, then can we hire for software engineering students in different parts of the world to work on this project together and to get the project done, maybe even better than that one person could have done, right? And thinking of this, you know, the hiring problem, which I think most leaders are facing right now, is a shortage of talent and not knowing where to recruit from. And that's why I bring it up, is because there are different ways that you can think about hiring. And I think that then make the whole hybrid experience richer. Because if you have people in different parts of the world, it only adds to the culture. It only enriches the culture. And if you're able to, you know, have something like Cafe where you can see where are the remote people, and those remote workers can then see, oh, you know, this person lives really close to me, then you also can give them a really great hybrid experience that isn't separate from, you know, the company. And I think a lot of freelancers and remote workers might feel that separation and might feel more isolated. And so how can you really create an extension of culture to, you know, not just exist at the office, but really to exist in the ethos and the way that you involve people, the way that you start meetings, the way that you have company conversation and activities online or in a hybrid style. So that's sort of, I think, what needs to change is this mindset that everyone has to be in the same place at the same time, working the same way. Because I think a more personalized approach to hiring and to employee experience, you'll end up serving people's needs, and that will make them want to stay. That will make them want to come work for you and to help you solve the problems that you're trying to solve.
Yeah. I mean, this very nicely leads into a question that I typically ask. If you could magically solve a future of work problem, what would it be?
Yeah. You know, I prefer the term the great reshuffling from the term the great rehire. Yeah. And that is because everyone who's quitting a job, right? Everyone who's leaving is going to work somewhere else or for themselves. And if I could solve any future of work problem, and the reason behind them leaving, I should add, is that they are trying to find what works for them and they're trying to find fulfillment, right? And people leave for different reasons, right? But at the end of the day, everyone wants freedom, they want flexibility, they want to be working for a purpose, right? You have 90,000 hours in your life to work. You might as well take the time to really figure out what you want to do. And some people don't. And, you know, that's totally fine. Some people want the job that, you know, is very structured and whatnot. But essentially, everyone's trying to find the right place for them. And so if I could solve any future work problem, it would be for each person to find what works for them and to be in that role that helps them grow and helps them get to where they want to go and where their values, right? The company values align with their own versus it being their values aligning with the company values, and really to find fulfillment at work and beyond. And I think it's, while it is an idyllic vision, right? And Gen Zers are known for being idealist. It is also a realistic one, because it's an optimistic one. And I think as long as you're optimistic in some way, you're tied to realism. You're tied to, right, this understanding of what's currently happening, but you're also, you have a positive outlook on it. So I think that is my vision, is really for people to find work and a culture that aligns with who they are, and versus trying to change themselves to fit someone else's idea of what they should be.
Last question for you. Who else should I have on the podcast? And is there something you, or some question that you would like to have for them?
Yeah. So I have never worked in an office. I've never worked a corporate job.
Oh.
I know. I've been an intern at Mindshare, which was fun, but I haven't worked a corporate job. And the reason is because when I was in college, I saw both my older siblings really struggle with their corporate jobs. And I realized, like, that's not the reality I want. But big but, I will say, I have watched Satya Nadella's leadership for years. And I have multiple mentors who work at Microsoft. So I would love to ask Satya Nadella, you know, what is his central mission or belief, right? Like, what is it that really motivates him to run the company the way that he does, in a way that's really focused on growth and personal development? And what was it like to be a leader so early on to have that vision?
Very good one. I'd love to ask that question as well, but we'll see if we can get him.
Might happen. We'll see. Yeah.
You can dream, right?
Anything's possible. We're talking about magical wishes.
Yes. So thank you very much, Danielle. It's been really great to talk to you and to get your perspective on some of the things that are moving our workplace industry.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. And you know, I will say, if any workplace leaders who are people-centric want to get in touch with me and get involved in the community, I'm really trying to foster more, you know, mental health conversations and more of a focus on that. Because I think this industry and these roles can be very stressful. So I'm trying to provide relief and, you know, both comical and emotional to people who are really seeking that support and that pertinent information, right? To connect, collect, and really celebrate together.
Great. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on data readiness in CRE, along with the opportunity to assess your organization's workplace insight score. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.